You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons with the one and only Coupon, NDB Media Sports.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Gal for All Seasons podcast and its triumphant return after a few-week hiatus. Yay! You're listening to Taryn the Coop Cooper here on NDB Media Sports, and no, don't check your calendars. It is Thursday at 7 p.m. I'm airing at a different time because it looked like my normal Wednesday slot wasn't going to work out for me. But I didn't want to put off the inevitable and talk about the second half of the baseball season. We're at All-Star break and perfect segue to talk about any second half predictions, what we were dead wrong on coming into the season, where the biggest surprises are. I just didn't want to wait another week for that. So I thank you all for your patience. I'll be back on Wednesday next week, same bat time, same bat place. And, you know, the only thing that I can say right now is, you know, going into the second half is that you can't script baseball, no matter how much you try. And 2012 has proved that anything can happen anywhere. And you all know I'm a Mets fan, and the first no-hitter was thrown this year, and that wasn't even the highlight of the season. At least I hope it's not. And no kidding, no matter, you know, what you who you sign, no matter who you think is good, no matter who you think can come back from an injury, you just can't script it. I have a special guest on tonight. Some of you may remember him. He was on my show prior to the season, and he was essentially throwing his hat into the ring for his own podcast, and he is currently the co-host of another show here on NBB Media on another sister channel. Without further ado, I'd like to bring back my guest, Paul Cataldo, from the co-host of STS Baseball. Paul, you with me?
See, to the oop, to the stir. Thank you for having me. Happy to be back.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. And, I mean, so much has happened. You were last on the show March 28th of this year. And I was actually listening to it again a few days ago to see if anything was really a little bit off. You know, that was a really great prediction show. I usually don't like doing, like, the grades of the first half and, you know, breaking things down, but there are so many interesting storylines in baseball, which is why I started out with you just can't script it. And, you know, no matter how much we tried to look at the dynamic going into the season, baseball's added the second wild card into the mix, and there are just so many interesting storylines, and we're both big baseball fans. You know, we're both passionate New York fans. You've got the Yankees, I've got the Mets, but overall, there are just so many stories. And, yeah, I mean, let's just get right into it. We were talking about, you know, we had our preseason prediction show, and, you know, we were pretty confident going into the season that, you know, not much was going to change, but There's just so much going on here. So let's go into some of, you know, your biggest surprises for the first half.
Well, before we even talk about teams, I think that for me, hands down, the biggest, like, blow me away, knock me on my ass surprise is 3-10, 6.42 ERA, 1.58 WHIP, out of the Bay, Tim Lincecum. What is wrong with him? Is he ever going to be the same again? To me, if you would have told me that preseason, I would have told you absolutely incorrect. I mean, I think a lot of people were worried that with that frail body of his, there might be some regression at some point a little bit early on, the same way Pedro Martinez didn't have the longevity because he was built in a similar fashion. But 6.42 and 1.58, I mean, to me, it's time to move him to the bullpen. I mean, that to me, that's, I mean, I tend to be a pessimist, so I like to talk about surprises in a negative sense first. So I don't know what's wrong with this guy, but, you know, to San Francisco's credit, they're still right there in the NL West race. They caught up with the Dodgers, and the Dodgers got ravaged with the Kemp injury and now the Ethier injury. But they need to figure this guy out, and I think apparently San Francisco knew something was up when the rest of us didn't, because they threw all that money at the right guy in Matt Cain, who's amazingly been better since he's gotten his big payday, which is very, very rare. And and Timmy's just nosediving right now. So I don't know what's wrong with him, and I hate to see it because he's a good kid. You know, he's a freak for a lot of different reasons, but this is not the reason that you want to call him a freak, because right now he's freakishly bad.
Right, right. I'm right there with you. I happen to be a huge Tim Lincecum fan. I fell in love with him a few years ago. I was even the backstory was in 2010 when my husband and I got married. We took our honeymoon to San Francisco, and we followed the Mets out there. I mean, we're Mets fans. We're a Mets family here, and it was actually Tim Lincecum bobblehead day when we were out there. So I made it a point to get a bobblehead because I loved him that much. And we were also able to see the first game back from All-Star break, and he was the starter. And there were so many stories with Lincecum. You know, like you said, he was the freak, and now he's just freakishly bad, and we don't know what's going on, if it's just an off year or if he'll ever be the same. But people have made comments about his pitching style and that it may be detrimental in the future. I just don't know what's going on. It's sad to see, for me, someone who is such a big Tim Lincecum fan, to hear that he's just going through all of this trouble right now, and I can't even really pinpoint why.
I don't think anybody can. I mean, take this number off for size. He's given up more earned runs this season in 96 innings pitched than he did in all of last season, 217 innings pitched. I mean, it's just, the numbers are insane for me to think that. I mean, an off year is like a 4 ERA, something like that. But to go through something this bad, I mean, I don't know if he's hurt and he's pitching through an injury and he doesn't want to say anything. I mean, there's so many different things that could be the reason. I like to think that if he was hurt, San Francisco would have already done their due diligence to figure out if that was the case scenario. So apparently that's not it either. I mean, it could just flat out be, you know, that frail body could just be breaking down. I mean, he's listed at 170, and I think that's given him more credit than he really is. So, I mean, I don't know what the problem is, but to me, if we're going to talk about what was the biggest surprise, at least from a negative point of view, for me, it's just way too surprising to see Timmy struggling the way he is. So I don't know if he's going to turn – I don't see him turning it around in the second half, but I'd rather see San Francisco put Brad Penny into the rotation and just move him to the bullpen at this point. They have to try anything and try to figure it out.
Right. I can't even really begin to think of how he would even turn things around. I'm not as familiar with the Giants organization, unfortunately, as I am with, say, you know, the Mets organization or any of the NL East teams. But I don't know if it's just like, you know, fake an injury and have him work his stuff out in the minors, or if it's, you know, more of something like, you know, we're just going to write this season off. He's having a bad, Barry Zito-esque year, and leave it at that. But it is sad to see. But like you said, it seriously hasn't impacted the Giants. I mean, one thing you can say about the San Francisco team is that over the years it was always about pitching, that they had such amazing pitching, but they didn't have a lot of run support. And this year there seems to be an even balance. And like you said, Matt Cain, as I don't want to say he's come out of nowhere. Matt Cain is always a strong pitcher. He's always a top flight pitcher. And, you know, but like you said, after his contract extension, he's really gone above and beyond what anyone has expected. So, you know, hat tip there for sure. Going to something that might be near and dear to your heart are the Pittsburgh Pirates. And the reason I say that is, I mean, everybody knows that Andrew McCutchen you're probably going to be MVP material someday. I mean, he's just a solid and outstanding player all around. But what was the biggest surprise? A.J. Burnett, 10-2. And I say it's near and dear to your heart because the Yankees just kind of gave up on him last year. And I think, from my standpoint, as you know, I have a big Twitter following and I follow a lot of Yankees fans. A lot of them wanted him out of town. And there were a few, I would say, you know, there was a vocal minority that wanted him to stay, that they wanted him to work his stuff out in New York. What do you think of that?
Well, first off, I'm not really surprised on that, believe it or not. I'm surprised he's doing as well as he's doing, but I'm not surprised that the change of scenery helped him. I'm definitely not surprised to see that. It's funny that you bring it up. That a lot of people wanted him to go, and I was always baffled about why he was so hated amongst the Yankee universe. I mean, understandably, he didn't earn his paycheck, but, you know, I actually called into Michael Kay's show around this time last year, and we talked about Burnett briefly. And when you think about it, at the end of the day, in terms of his postseason career with the Yankees, I'm going to take the regular season out of that because he had so many ups and downs throughout the regular season. It's more of an attention span thing with him, I think. But when push came to shove, if you take out like that one bad start, game five at Philadelphia in 2009, he actually had very close numbers to what Sabathia has put out since he came to New York. So when it mattered, Burnett actually came through for the Yankees. I mean, a lot of people forget Game 2 of the World Series in 2009 when they were down 0-1 after Cliff Lee beat CC Sabathia. He doesn't come out and beat Pedro in that game. Yankees don't win in 2009. So, I mean, you know, it's hard to sit there and say, did you pay $80 million for one title? You know, but you take a look at A-Rod and you're paying him $250 million, and he's delivered basically the same thing. So it doesn't surprise me. I actually thought he was great for the clubhouse. A lot of people liked him, you know, the whole pie-in-the-face thing after the walk-off hits him. You know, at the end of the day, he's not going to be a favorite of the Yankee fans, but I really don't feel like he should be hated either. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, how can he move to a different team and now all of a sudden be good? But, you know, a lot of people don't understand that these guys are human. Just because they're athletes doesn't mean that they're not human beings. And, you know, sometimes the spotlight of New York or Boston, Chicago, L.A., whatever market you want to talk about, it affects these guys. And, you know, it's not the first time it's happened that a guy's left New York and done well. And let's not forget, he went from the best hitting division in baseball to arguably the worst hitting division in baseball. I mean, you know, I was starting to look at what his second-half pitching matchups project to be from a fantasy perspective, and I can't even find a tough matchup for this guy because he plays against so many weak teams. So, you know, a 3.6 ERA in the NL Central isn't exactly, you know, Cy Young or Walker Johnson material. But, you know, he's winning games. They're winning games. I don't know if they're going to hold on and hold off the Reds. But they're like you said, it's a cool story. It's a cool thing to see. I mean, you know, being a Yankee fan, you want to be there every year, obviously. But this is what's great for the game in general. These teams they're coming out of nowhere like Washington, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. You know, all of a sudden these teams are in the race, and it's not, you know, the typical, you know, usual suspects, you know, the Phillies and the Red Sox, the Yanks, the Tigers. It's great to see these other teams, you know, stepping up, and it'll be interesting to see over the next 10 weeks if they can hang on.
Yeah, you brought up so many interesting points, and I agree. I mean, that I was talking earlier about how, how the manager of the year kind of gets chosen is it's not necessarily the best team that wins. It's the team that had the lowest expectations and actually exceeded them. So, you know, Clint Hurdle has got a reputation of just being like a real organized, having a real plan going out there. So the fact that Pittsburgh, you know, and like you said, I have to believe it to see it, or see it to believe it rather, that they hold on in the second half and really, you know, fight for the title or at least be a wild card contender if they can keep it up. And, I mean, a lot weirder stuff has happened in baseball, but Clint Hurdle is obviously, you know, a testament to how that team has really turned itself around and has a reputation that they're not going to lay down. So, like you, I love hearing these stories, especially in the smaller market. But, you know, you also touched on the Philadelphia Phillies. And like you, you know, prior to the season, I was on another show and I said, until they give me a good reason not to believe it, I thought they were going to win the division. And they have fallen so far off the market. You know, they've lost Halladay, and Cliff Lee didn't win a game until like a week and a half ago. I guess that's what $24 million gets you. Ryan Howard started off the year injured, but if you remember, I think it's going to choke the team. 5 years, $125 million, that went into effect this year. And he's just getting older and slower. you know, he'll still be a home run threat for sure, but, you know, what exactly are you paying him for? You're paying him for past performance. You know, and then there's the Cole Hamels situation, and I know you happen to be very high on Cole Hamels. I mean, the Mets have a history of owning him, so I have a hard time. I have a hard time giving him credit, but I will say it is his walk year. He has been showing that he is pitching for a contract, but there is the talk that they might be trading him to a contender for, you know, a half-year rental. And, you know, what's your thought on that?
Well, I think what the Phillies were trying to do is that they knew they were going to fall behind early with the injuries that they had. I think their plan was basically to tread water, and what they hoped was going to be a division where, you know, at best, you know, every team was going to be hovering around 500. You know, they weren't expecting the Mets to do what they did. They weren't expecting the Nationals to be where they are. And, you know, had those teams played 500 ball, they'd only be, you know, 5 or 6 games out or so, but they're way out now. I mean, they're 14 games out, and it's just too much, I think. I mean, they weren't expecting Howard and Utley to be out as long as they were. They obviously weren't expecting Halliday to go down with the injury. Victorino has had one of the worst years I can remember, and he's in a walk year, surprisingly. I mean, how the hell did Carlos Ruiz go from hitting eighth to cleanup? I mean, he's had a great season and all that, but how does he go from hitting eighth to hitting cleanup in that lineup? So they had so many things just go wrong for them this year, and I think it's time now for them to start seriously considering the future of this team. And it still blows my mind that they can't find, you know, common ground for a contract extension for Cole. I mean, they gave all that money. I mean, I know you don't like him, and I know, like you said, the Mets have owned him, but this is the youngest guy out of this staff, and they've given all that money to an older Halliday, an older Lee, and then they're going to let the young stud leave, and it's just, it doesn't make any sense to me. They gave the money to the wrong people, I feel like. I feel like it was unnecessary. The whole Cliff Lee, they should have not signed Cliff Lee, and they should have, you know, allocated that money to Cole Hamels. I mean, they weren't even interested in Lee. Lee reached out to them. So, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I think he's getting traded. And, you know, I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I think he's going to get traded to the Pirates. Keep in mind now what happened with the Pirates last year. They were actually in a very similar spot last year, and they played like an 18 or 19 inning game with the Braves, and they lost on a completely Bush League call at home plate by the umpire, and then they fell apart after that. It was just literally after that game, they just hit the toilet. And if they want to be serious contenders, they've got a young prospect up in their system, and you know, I think that this could be the time for them to make a big splash, make a deal, and if they want to be serious, you know, go out, make a deal happen for Cole, and you know, see what they can do. I think the Phillies have to deal Cole, because he can bring in a truckload, even if it's just for a rental, because Cole Hamels going to a team like the Phillies, the Pirates, or because the NL is wide open. So I think it's something that needs to happen, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Pirates jump in on it. Their blue chip prospect is a kid named Starlin Marte, and I think that if they want to put him out there, they could potentially land Cole from the Phillies.
Right. You know, I can definitely see a scenario like that happen, and I actually do agree. You know, and you mentioned the money allocated to Halliday and Lee, who are getting older. I also mentioned the Ryan Howard contract, and I predicted when it was signed 2 years ago that was essentially the falling action of that team, that you weren't really going to see much of them when that contract kicked in. And it looks like that's going to happen. And, like, honestly, I think the Phillies just tried to, you know, essentially bite off more than they can chew. I think, you know, they saw that, you know, they were successful. But if you look at the method in which they got successful, it was with a lot of homegrown guys, a lot of guys that had internal investment. They were able to trade their blue chip prospects to Toronto in netting Halliday. And like you said, when, you know, Lee approached them, it seemed to me like Lee was willing to take almost a, you know, quote-unquote hometown discount, even though that wasn't his team, because he was so interested in playing. And, you know, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, how Cliff Lee's wife was saying, oh, my God, the Yankees fans are so horrible, and they were so mean to us, and blah, blah, blah. I can't even think about what Phillies fans are saying to her about her husband now. I mean, they're just the most fickle fan base, and you know what? Good riddance. They all get what they deserve. But, you know, in the another surprise that, you know, I'm thinking of is the NL Central, and I know that that's one of the weaker divisions, and we didn't spend, I'm sorry, not the NL Central, the AL Central, my bad. That was one of the weaker divisions. We didn't even really discuss that, but like you, I thought that the Tigers were really a lock, but the White Sox came out of nowhere. Ozzie Guillen leaves them, goes to the Marlins, to that gigantic shit show down there. And then, you know, Robin Ventura takes over. They had a perfect game by not one of their good pitchers, but it doesn't really matter because, you know, Alex Rios is having an amazing comeback season, and there's Chris Sale. I mean, what do you think about the White Sox?
I don't even – here's the thing about the AL Central. Everyone talks about how the White Sox came out of nowhere and the Indians are right there and the Tigers are such a disappointment. People forget the Tigers are a lousy 3.5 games out of first place. They're still going to win that division. I'm not worried about them. Leland is a seasoned vet. Ventura is doing it for the first time. The Indians don't have the personnel to get it done. The Tigers are still going to win that division, and I wouldn't be surprised if they win it by 7 or 8 games either. I still think that they're the class of that division. Yes, they're only playing 500 ball, but they're going to be just fine. They had a little hiccup, you know, that whole Dumb and Young racial incident came up. Doug Fister was on the DL, but I don't worry about them. I'd actually keep an eye out for them in the trade market. Don't be surprised if they're in the Zach Greinke deal talks. They could even get in on Cole, too. It all depends, but that's a team that's going to be just fine. I still think they're going to win the division. But the White Sox have been an interesting surprise, but, you know, Dunn has come back incredibly well. Forget about Alex Rios. Adam Dunn is back. Jake Peavy's having an incredible walk year. Chris Sale's having a great welcome party. But, you know, the law of averages pretty much states that these guys aren't going to keep this up for an entire season, especially Sale. Sale's numbers are just incredible.
Right.
But I think this is his first real long batch of exposure to major league hitters. And I've seen this movie before, and I know how it ends. The first couple of times through the league, these guys with talent, they're dominant. And then once the adjustments get made, they get hit around. And that's what baseball is. It's a game of adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see
what
the adjustments get made in the second half. But I still say the Tigers win that division. And I wouldn't be surprised if the White Sox just flat out don't make the playoffs because I just don't see it happening. I'm not a believer in it. You know, I'm not trying to shoot on the White Sox, but I'm not a believer in them. It's a nice story. I know that Ventura is probably, holds a special place in your heart for the walk-off grand slam single and all that kind of stuff. And he's a great cat and everything. Everyone has nothing but nice things to say about him. But I just don't see it. I just don't see it in the cards for them. I think the Tigers will 3.5 game deficit, all that takes is one weekend sweep of the White Sox and they're in first place. So it's still super tight. Anything can happen there. So, my opinion is what I'm gonna stick with what I said preseason, that the Tigers are still going to win that division, although I am backing off my Phillies winning the East prediction.
Well, you know what, I certainly respect your take on the AL Central, but I can see your point of view, and I do know that nothing is set in stone just because, how many times have the Mets been in first place at the second, you know, the beginning of the second half, and then they've just completely tanked and lost it all. So I can certainly respect that. But I always like to hear a good story coming out of a team that really didn't have many expectations, kind of like the Pirates, and then there's the White Sox. And the Nationals are such an interesting team to me. Not only do I pay close attention to them because they're in the division, you say Robin Ventura has a soft spot in my heart. Well, Davey Johnson has my heart. I love that man. Love, love, love him for what he did with the Mets in the 80s. I just think, you know, he works very well with young players. Strasburg is having a great season. Bryce Harper came and just lit a fire. Gio Gonzalez is a front runner for the NL Cy Young, no doubt. But what's interesting is that, you know, and you and I talked about this on the preseason show about how Strasburg is going to have an innings cap. Do you feel like that is going to play into things when down the stretch?
They might be the most interesting team to watch because of that in the second half. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, there's a lot of different rumors out there right now that they might find, you know, that mysterious blister and put them on the DL for a couple of weeks and move the remaining 70 innings or so, whatever it is that he has left, to the latter half of the year. But you know, they've got a 4-game lead in the division. I mean, if they make the playoffs, are they just not going to pitch him? I mean, it's a really, really hard, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. And we talked about it preseason, and, you know, everyone looked at them as like a sexy, you know, little pick, but I don't think anybody is expecting them to be this good. And I don't think anyone expected Harper to, you know, come to the show and be as successful as he's been. So they've really sort of maximized their potential so far. Again, we still have, you know, 70 games left to go here and whatnot, and they're going to have to hold on. But, you know, if it were I, it's not really a game anymore, it's a business. And they've invested a lot of money in the kid, and at the end of the day, even if they do go to the playoffs with him and Gonzalez in the rotation, it's such a long shot to say that they're going to win the whole thing. I mean, they have a very, very mediocre offense. It's very hard to win when you can't even – I mean, they have no offense whatsoever. I mean, zero, zilch. But they do have the pitching, and the Giants won that way a few years ago. So, but for me, because this game is no longer a game and it's a business, I think that they have to stick to their guns and protect him. He's been injured before, and, you know, the other school of thought is, well, you know, you're not in this position every year to potentially win it, and the NL is wide open. There isn't, like, a powerhouse team. But, I mean, so what happens if they go all the way to the World Series and they run into, you know, a beast like the Rangers or something like that, and the Rangers finally get rid of their Buffalo Bill syndrome? So, you know, is it worth it? Look what happened with – I know Chris Carpenter is older, but look what happened with Chris Carpenter last year. Yes, the Cardinals, you know, rode him all the way to a title, but his career is done now. I mean, that workload destroyed his arm, and you never know what can happen with this kid. So, you know, he's got a lot of torque in his delivery, and if it were me, I shut him down, and you just look at this as the coming-out party for many seasons to come. There should be no rush. This is a young team. It's a team of resources that has money. They have a good GM. They have a great manager, like you said. So I shut him down. I don't even bother with this whole DL thing because the Yankees tried to do that with Chamberlain in terms of breaking up the innings and giving him extra days off, and that completely, you know, put the kibosh on any sort of ascension to the ranks that he would have had. So for me, whatever your limit is, whether it's 160, 170, he hits it, you shut him down, that's the end of it. And that's just it for me. And the only thing maybe I contemplate doing, this probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense either, but if they do make it to the playoffs and they do go deep, and let's say it's a seventh game of the NLCS against the Dodgers or something like that, you know, if you might want to pull a rabbit out of your hat and bring him out of the pen for that one game to get you there, I'm okay with something like that, you know, because it's a movie script kind of thing. But stick to your guns, stick to the innings limit, have that be it.
Right. Yeah, pitchers are just so interesting to me, and that's why I tend to follow them more closely than I do certain players. And the idea, I, as you know, I'm a Mets fan, and Ron Darling nearly had a stroke on the air when he heard about the innings cap on Strasburg, and he said it, you know, protecting his arm was something that he didn't believe in. He thought, you know, nowadays, I mean, he's an old curmudgeon. He's going to really believe that being a pitcher isn't the best course of action. It may be unpopular, but then again, you know, coming out of the gate, the Nationals could lose 10 games in a row. Like, we just don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, going to the whole, you can't script baseball, motif, you know, that ties into that as well. Now, another interesting storyline that's come out, and I mean, you probably pay more attention to them than I do since they're in your division, has been the surprising start for the Baltimore Orioles. And I think a big part of that, Jim Johnson, Says leader, and, you know, how I mentioned before about how Clint Hurdle has really kind of helped put forth this work ethic with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and then it's always these old hat guys like Buck Showalter who comes in and ends up, you know, it's either, you know, by design, you know, they throw a bunch of players together and hope for the best, or maybe he just happens to get the best out of the players that he has. But I guess maybe I'm just a little bit cynical, because I do follow the Orioles since I did have, you know, a mad crush on Cal Ripken back in the day, and it was all purely professional, but I do tend to have a soft spot in my heart for them as well, and I just don't see them keeping this up in the second half. But what do you think, since you follow them a lot more closely than I do?
Zero chance, and I know that sounds like the typical Yankee fan response, but, you know, when you look at this team, you know, the pitching has been okay. It hasn't been great. It hasn't been terrible. The bullpen has been very good, though, like you said. Jim Johnson, Pedro Strop, another guy that's been great out of the pen. Luis Ayala, former Yankee. And Matt Lindstrom's also been great. So he's actually has a very, very strong bullpen. But the weakness of this team, which has been, to me, the weakness of this team for years, and it's going to continue to be a weakness because, A, no one wants to pitch in that park because it's a hitter's park, and B, no one wants to pitch against the teams in that division, is that they have no starting pitching that's going to ride them throughout the entire season. Now, that being said, though, they have been mentioned in the trade talks for Zach Greinke. So if they can land a Greinke, if Greinke's out in the market, or a Cole Hamels, that certainly changes the dynamic of whether or not they can, you know, push for the wild card. They're not going to win the division. The Yankees are obviously going to win that division. But when you think about this team, you know, sans Adam Jones, who's just a beast, who I'm a huge, huge fan of, they've got Steve Piercy in left field, Flaherty in right, you know, Andino, who's a decent player, Betemeet, who's a decent player, Reynolds, who is terrible at first base, J.J. Hardy, who's been good, you know, Wieters, who's had a good year behind the plate. But when you look at this team, you're like, this isn't a playoff team. And like you said, I mean, if it looks like shit and it smells like shit, then it probably is. And that's what this team, unless they make a deal for a big arm, they're not going to be in that race. It's just not going to happen. I mean, the Red Sox aren't as bad as they've been. They're going to come back in the second half. Toronto can pound with the best of them every night. And then there's the Yankees and the Rays. So I don't think it's going to happen. And it's not going to happen again until, you know, Duquette gets, you know, a bunch of some arms in there. Duquette. He has to get starting pitching there. And you have to trade for it when you have a team like that in that division in that park. So we'll see if they make a deal. But, you know, if they do not make a deal, this is a team that will eventually hit a wall.
No, I completely agree with that 100%. I would be remiss if we didn't at least acknowledge our own teams. You know, I've said before, you're the Yankee fan, I'm the Mets fan. I will say that the Mets have really surprised me. I can't really say I was expecting much, but I guess after 2007 and 2008, maybe low expectations isn't such a bad thing. I've been completely floored by the performance of Johan Santana and, of course, Ari Dickey, who is just a rock star these days. He's the most interesting man in baseball, and that's not even my term. Other people have said that about him. And, you know, there's just something about a knuckleballer. And then, you know, there's the comeback of David Wright, who, you know, was injured last year, and he was hurt. He had a slow just everything last year. He just wasn't himself, and this year he's just been an absolute monster, and it's been a real testament, and it's been a lot of fun. Mets fans do tend to like and overhype their prospects a little too much, but having a majority homegrown team has been a lot of fun to watch, so I'm really looking forward to see what they can do in the second half and try to keep up you know, with the rest of the NL East, because it's going to be interesting, and I hope that they're active in the buyer's market at the trade deadline. But like you said, it just looks like the Yankees are going to be a lock to win the division again. But, you know, has anything kind of stood out to you this season for them?
Well, I want to talk about your guys real quick, though, because the one thing that on my show that annoys me a little bit is that my counterpart, Kenny Melendez, is one of those Yankee fans that for whatever reason loves to see the Mets in misery, and I just don't get it. I don't understand why any Yankee fans have problems with the Mets. Like, I've never hated the Mets. I never have. I never will. And it really baffled me in 2009 when we were playing the Phillies, and so many Mets fans were saying, I want to see the Phillies win, which made no sense to me, because if the Mets were playing the Red Sox in the World Series, I'd have a 57 jersey on, and I'd be at Citi Field right next to you rooting for the Mets. So for me, you know, I'm happy to see them, you know, where they are. It still surprises me because I look at the depth chart and, you know, half of these names to this day, I still don't recognize them. But, you know, they're doing their job. And it's interesting when you bring up the trade market because, you know, the rumors have always been that the farm system is pretty is stretched pretty thin. And, do they have the assets? And, B, do they want to make the moves? I mean, I think coming into this season, they were expecting it to be a lost season, you know, moving the fences, have David Wright have a big first half, and then let's see what we can get for him and trade him. But the next thing you know, he's hitting 360. On top of that, Ari Dickey is the best. I'm saying it. Ari Dickey is the best pitcher in baseball in the first half. Still can't believe he didn't start the All-Star game. The Mets got snubbed twice on him and David Wright not starting. But you know, Jonathan Nease is having a nice year. Of course, Johan's had a great comeback year. You know, Bobby Parnell's been great out of the bullpen. This is a team that, you know, if they can acquire a bat, you know, maybe they can ride Dickey and Santana, plus, you know, they can ride them right into the playoffs. But I do think they need a bat. I think they're a bat short right now from making any serious noise. The question is a bat going to be out there? You know, most of the trades that the talks we're hearing about is for pitchers this year. So I don't know. I mean, Justin Upton's name started getting thrown around. They probably don't have enough to land him. But I think they need to, you know, Carlos Quinton is out there. You know, his name has been mentioned. I wouldn't, if I was a Mets, I would definitely kick the tires on him to see if they can maybe get a guy like that. But I like what they've done, and I'm happy to see them doing well. And you know, I mean, anything good in New York is good for New York. So I you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to come on your show and predict they're not going to be able to do it. But all I'm going to say is that I think right now they're a bad short from sustaining, you know, the 162 game haul. In terms of the Yankees, I think all is well in the Bronx, but I think if the same old shit's going to happen that happens every year. You know, the Yankees' big lineup is going to slug them to the playoffs, and then we'll see, you know, what that lineup can do against serious playoff pitching. I mean, this is a team that's not doing anything with runners in scoring position. They're, you know, they're homering their way to a division title, and usually that doesn't translate well to the playoffs. I like that we have Andy to slide in back behind CeCe in the postseason, but is he going to be healthy? You know, he's got the ankle issue now. So it'll be the same story as always. The, you know, they'll have the big bats. The bats won't be as big in the playoffs, and will they have enough pitching to take them deep? So, you know, I foresee a Rangers-Yankees showdown, and if the Rangers add a Greinke, because they're another team that's been in the mix for Greinke, you know, we'll see what happens then. But I think that if there's any team that can outclub the Yankees, it's the Rangers. So while there's reason to be optimistic with the best record in baseball, like I said before, I'm going to say it again, I've seen this movie and I see how it ends, and good pitching beats good hitting. So we'll see how the playoff pitcher pans out in the East. But, you know, we'll, you know, I'm lukewarm on the postseason prospects for the Yanks. We'll see what I think a lot of it hinges on Andy Pettit. So we'll see how he comes back.
Okay, fair enough. And, you know, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to get your, you know, your real quick first half MVPs.
Say it again, Coop.
First half MVPs.
It's Hamilton in the AL. Mike Trout's close for the difference that he's made with the Angels. Cano is probably third. But Hamilton's numbers are just too big, and that actually goes against my MVP definition, because I really don't like to base it off numbers. But Hamilton's had just too big of a first half, and if he stays healthy and he continues, you can't not give it to him, being that they're first place in that division. But my normal definition is that if you remove that guy from the team, are they still a playoff team? And I think if you take Cano and Hamilton off the Yankees and the Rangers respectively, I think that they can still be a playoff team. But remember, the Angels were in the dumps, and then Trout came up, and all of a sudden – They're right there in the West. So so there's a case to be made for Trout right now. But, again, he is a 20-year-old rookie. So we'll see, you know, if he can sustain the long haul of a full season. And for me right now, the NL MVP is Andrew McCutchen. I mean, he has nobody in that lineup with him. I mean, absolutely nobody. And, you know, Votto is probably a close second. You know, because the Pirates are in first place right now, McCutchen would get my vote for that reason, because it's his team ahead of Votto's team. But again, like you said earlier, you know, if the Mets find a way to get into the playoffs, how do you not talk about David Wright? But for me right now, though, it's McCutchen and Hamilton.
Right. Yeah, you know what? Those are my two picks, too. It's really hard to argue, like you said, with Hamilton's numbers. And then McCutchen, it's always, you know, you do go back to that argument. If you take that person out of the lineup and half the team and the Pirates are absolutely nothing, you know, taking away, you know, who knows how A.J. Burnett would be doing if not for, you know, McCutchen in that lineup. So that's definitely something to think about. Cy Young, first half.
This is easier said than done, but in the AL, it's clearly the guy from last year. It's clearly Verlander. I actually don't even think it's close right now. I mean, you can say Sale, you can say PV. Jared Weaver, but Jared Weaver has spent some time on the DL. So for me, it's still Verlander. In the NL, it's the same debate that La Russa had. You know, is it Dickey? Is it Kane? But I said a few minutes ago, I'm going to say it again. So far, Dickey has been the best pitcher in baseball, and he should have started the All-Star game. And as of right now, he's the NL Cy Young Award winner for me. But again, we still have 10, 11 weeks left to go. But at this point, it's Dickey. But if I had to make a prediction and get all your listeners ready to be mad at me, I would say Kane would outlast him for the long haul. And Verlander still will win the AL Cy Young. So I'm going to predict Kane, but if I had to give it out right now, I'd give it to Dickey.
Right. Well, it's so funny how, you know, Verlander's lost, what, how many games? He's lost five games so far. And, how we're like, oh, my God, Verlander, what's happened to him? But he's still money. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
He's by a mile. I don't care what happened on Tuesday. He's by a mile the biggest beast that can get on the hill in the game, period. I don't want to hear anything about, Kane or Kershaw or Halliday or Lee. I don't want to hear anything. He is just from another planet, and he's a throwback guy. So he's clearly the best in the game, period.
All right. Yeah, I happen to think that it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. David Price was up there for me, Chris Sale, and because of his performance out of the pen is Johnson from the Orioles, because we seem to forget that Cy Young Award winners don't necessarily have to be starters. And the NL is interesting. I mean, R.A. Dickey, like I said, every Mets fan just loves this guy, and he's the story in baseball. Gio Gonzalez is also up there. But then, the thing with R.A. Dickey, because I get on a lot of Mets podcasts, and we talk a lot about Dickey's performance and is it Cy Young Award worthy. And honestly, I think a lot of people have the feeling on knuckleballs that Tony La Russa had, and that's why he didn't get the start. And, I think it's a voodoo pitch. They think it's a mystery pitch. And I'm afraid that he won't get enough credit, but I do appreciate that, you can definitely see him for what he is. But we have about 4 minutes left, but I just wanted a quick plug of your show. You and Kenny have just been doing an amazing job. You've been getting great guests. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on there?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that, Coop. We're still on every Monday at 8 Eastern right here on NDB Media, and we actually have a very, very interesting show coming up this Monday where our guest for the second straight show is going to be Corey Schwartz from MLB Advanced Media and the co-host of MLB's Fantasy 411 on MLB.com. And what we did on our last show with him is we basically provided him with an all-bus team and whether or not he would buy, hold, and sell on certain players from a fantasy perspective. We basically gave him an entire lineup at every position. And what we're going to do this week is we're going to flip that and we're going to give him what we like to call all Wahoo team, where guys who are overperforming based on where their preseason original ranks were, and again, whether he would buy, hold, or try to sell these guys. So it was a very interesting show last time. We're looking forward to it this time. And if you guys aren't familiar with the show, you can check us out at facebook.com/STS2SceneBaseball, and on Twitter, where our handle is at STS2Scene.
All right, fantastic. And, I thank you for coming on the show once again. And, I'm sure I'll have you on for some kind of postseason wrap-up at this point.
It's always a pleasure, Coop. You got me started in the business here, and like always, I'm indebted to you. So, again, I appreciate everything and happy to come on.
All right, great. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, Coop. Take care.
All right. And you're listening to the Gal for All Seasons podcast here on NDB Media Sports and Blog Talk Radio. We're out of time. Many, many, many thanks once again to my outstanding guest, Paulie Caldo from show that's on our sister channel with NDB Media. And I think that's about it. You can find me on Twitter at Coops22, COOPZ22. I'm at galforallseasons.com, and I am running the New York City Marathon. You can help me with my fundraiser, bit.ly.com/thecoopfundraiser. And I will be back on in 6 days, so you can get your in 6 days. Next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the Gal for All Seasons podcast, NDB Media Sports, Blog Talk Radio. Thanks a bunch, everyone. Peace out.